Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think part of the problem in America and with the American crowds is, like, there's no self-policing at all.
No.
Like, that's how crowds work.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue and it is match week number 7 of the Premier League. Once again, Off the Ball's Colin Bowie will be in to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures, and we'll also talk about what's been going on in the world of the Premier League this week. Another manager sacked, that's manager number 2. Could we have manager number 3 after this weekend? We shall find out. I'm also going to be joined by John McCarthy from the Irish Hammers. He's going to talk about his beloved West Ham, who are not doing too well so far this season, but they do have a new manager. This is The Kickoff. Let's get into it.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue.
You're very welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. It's another busy week in the Premier League. A new manager that's not so new. A first loss for the reigning champions and a big win for our man, Keith Andrews and his Brentford team. Off the Ball's rebel, Colin Boohig is here. How are you?
Cathal, how are you? You well?
I was thinking of another word after rebel, couldn't really think of one. But, I mean, Colin Bowie's rebel. Not that you're a rebel downstairs in any professional capacity. More so, you're a cork, man.
Like a disruptor in a cool LinkedIn way. Or just a disruption. Who knows?
Who knows?
But the fact of the matter is, Colin, last time I checked, the rebel county was Cork. All right, they're just the fattest stock facts. Rafa Benitez style press conference, right? Yeah. That's the facts of it. Fact of life. Fact of it. How are you?
Good. It's a busy week.
Yeah.
I think I want to start off with the fact that Liverpool have their first loss. I know they lost during the week as well to Galatasaray. Yeah. But let's just focus on the Premier League for now.
Yeah.
We are a Premier League show.
Indeed.
At the weekend, they lost 2-1 away to Crystal Palace. A weird one in a sense that Liverpool have had a great start to the league in terms of wins. Mm. And they're top of the league. But it also kind of felt inevitable that they were going to lose at some stage, and they lost to a very good Crystal Palace team.
Yeah, I mean, look, we do this slot called the Performance Rankings and Off the Ball Breakfast every Monday morning.
Mm.
And it's safe to say that Liverpool could very much be in the amber all season long. But if it was a slot called the Results Rankings, they would be the greenest of green. Because Liverpool, up until this Crystal Palace game in Selhurst Park, were flawless on paper. But then you watch the detail of the games and they're anything but that. And look, I suppose that's what happens when you sign that many good players at once. Like, this is like not quite the Galacticos tag for the individual players, but it's reminiscent of how Real Madrid used to spend their money in the early to mid 2000s, in that they're going to get a lot of real quality in at once, and how can you fit them all together. So for example, like at that time when it was actually the Galacticos or Real Madrid, you had David Beckham signed after Luis Figo, and they both took up the same part of the pitch. So in the first game that Beckham played for Real Madrid, one of them I think was right back and the other was right midfield. Fast forward to 2025 and this version of Liverpool, it's not quite players bumping into each other, so to speak, but it's a player like Florian Wirtz, who you spend mad money on, who was one of the top players in European football, not just in the Bundesliga and beyond with Bayer Leverkusen or Xabi Alonso, but a real talent. A lot of people are excited when Liverpool forked out for him. But at the moment, very early days, albeit, there isn't really a natural position for Wirtz in this side. So you could argue that the strongest midfield that Liverpool have is the same midfield from last season, despite all the changes over the summer. So that would still be Gravenberch, who's quickly established as one of Liverpool's most important players, along with McAllister and along with Szoboszlai. Mm. What's happened this season, of course, is Szoboszlai is often playing right back and doing pretty well in that position, but he's also in form as a central midfielder. So those three are probably the most natural fit for Arne Slot's side at the moment. And then if you want to get as natural as possible in the front three, and this is like, generally speaking, I'm talking about here, would be their strongest team against the toughest opposition. Mo Salah on the right side, Alexander Isak through the middle, and Hugo Ekitike on the left, which would leave no place for Wirtz.
Yeah.
But there will, of course, be games this season where you're at home to the likes of a Burnley or a Wolves or, say, an out-of-form Fulham, where you're playing Wirtz as part of the midfield three and then sacrificing one of those lads from last season. So there'll be ample opportunity to do that. So the options are glorious for Liverpool. Despite centre-half, they're a bit short with Leone, the young fella that they signed for Parma. He did a bad knee injury against Southampton in the League Cup last week. and Ibrahima Konaté is not in form at centre-back alongside Virgil van Dijk, outside of central defence, they have so many options. So go back to your original point about the performance. The performance isn't there. I suspect it's simply teething issues of a lot of talent coming in at once and how to get the best out of them. And maybe it's a case that Liverpool will retain the Premier League, which will be a first for them in the Premier League. Mm. Not, of course, league titles overall, but the Premier League since 1992. It could still happen that Liverpool achieve that for the first time, along with even, say, another Champions League, without Wirtz ever really hitting form. Without, dare I say, Isak replicating what he did at Newcastle in order for Liverpool to fork out the money that they did. It is a funny old thing that Liverpool already have enough talent to do the ultimate this season without what they've added. But it'd be a shame to have that much of an outlay on those two players, Isak and Wirtz, and for them to essentially be handy add-ons, cherry on tops. When's the last time you paid over 100 million euro for cherries?
It's been a while. Back when the boom.
Celtic Tiger.
Yeah. Long time ago. You know, interestingly, Gary Breen heard him during the week talking about Liverpool, and he was going on a bit of a, say, a rant. Mm. But it was very interesting. One of the top lines that I got from it is that he thinks that Salah, his form now, which is way off in comparison to last season, yeah, he thinks that Salah won't see out this season with Liverpool.
Well,
it could be gone.
It's a really interesting shout by Gary Breen, because, like, Kyle, I got to a point, I'd say, the tail end of last season, that if you spoke ill of Salah the footballer, you were reprimanded by the public at large. Because how could you say anything against this Egyptian king? Because for the first two-thirds of last season, Salah, even by his standards, was untouchable to his previous self, never mind any other player. He was amazing. And then he petered out a bit. He's 33. We saw midweek, and we're going to primarily talk about the Premier League here, but we saw midweek that he was dropped in a European game for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
You could argue he was rested, but he's never really rested in these type of games. He only ever sits out games that are dead rubbers in Europe. So it was a surprise to see that happening against Galatasaray midweek. But I think it's going to start happening a bit more if he doesn't find form quickly. Like, he still has scored his share of goals this season so far. Look, we're very early days in all of this, but I could see Gary Breen being correct. There's a prediction that we come to January. Look, the AFCON is on as well, the Africa Cup of Nations. A lot of players will be away, so there'll be a bit of a distraction to the Premier League at large. But I could see an outfit, Saudi Arabia or wherever, coming in for Salah in January. I wonder, though, will Liverpool just reject that out of sight and say, no, give us one full more season of Salah? That's no way for him to go, because he is a bit of a special case. You're not going to leave him go in that manner unless he specifically requests to go. But I could envision a scenario where Salah starts fewer games as the season progresses if Liverpool continue to be unconvincing, because I don't think Arne Slot is a sentimentalist by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's very aware of Salah and his place at Liverpool, that, you know, he is undoubtedly one of the greats. Just look at his numbers. Just look at the number of goals he scored. Just look where he is in the goal scoring charts for that great club. But I'm less convinced of Salah as a short to medium term option in Liverpool's starting 11. Is it only downhill from here? That would be too much of a stretch, because he can make fools of all of us in the next couple of games. He could score a brace in each of them and you're like, he's back.
Yeah.
Because this isn't your average 30 something. You know, this is a guy who looks after himself monumentally well, who could play right up to the age of 40 at a decent level if he continues that conditioning. And who's to say he won't? But there is an element of me that I kind of see very much where Gary Breen is coming from, that this could peter out relatively quickly for Salah at Liverpool. But I'm only going by what's happened early days this season. And Salah is there to make mugs of any doubters. And he always has done.
It's interesting, though. It's a far cry from what we were thinking last year. They play Chelsea away this weekend. We'll look ahead to some of the games that are happening this weekend later on in the show. Moving on, Arsenal. Big win for them, seen as Liverpool drop points. Last minute, 2-1 against Newcastle. Were you impressed with them?
I was impressed with the result. Again, a bit like Liverpool, but
just grinding it out.
Slightly more impressive in that, you know, for the squad that they have, and I'm nearly as equally impressed with Arsenal's squad as Liverpool's. They still, I think, lack the self-belief to go and kill teams with their football. I don't think they play great football. However, what Mikel Arteta has done at Arsenal, and bear in mind, Carl, this is still his first job in management. He just so happens to have been there a long time. I think it's January 2020 he took over. And his first and only trophy was 6 months later in the first COVID FA Cup final against Chelsea. Since then, there's no silverware. But he's undoubtedly turned what was a slight laughing stock of a club when he took over into like one of the most solid outfits in European football. And I don't mean that to damn that with faint praise. Like that is something that many teams lack, in that they have a real solid foundation. Defensively, they're excellent. Their midfield is so, so strong. And they've added firepower in the final third alone, not just Gyökeres in terms of signing a centre forward. In general, they have way better options with Eber Ayetse.
Yeah.
I just think the one thing they lack is they don't play enough football for the talent that they have. And it's a bit disappointing. So in the Newcastle game, that's a winner by their central defender, Gabriel, deep into injury time at St James's Park. However, the difference in this Arsenal than previous iterations under Arteta is that the game at St James's Park has often been defining for all the wrong reasons for Arteta. You look at a few years ago, right towards the end of the season, when Arsenal really looked like they were going to be title contenders, they blew it up there. I think it was as late as May in the season and they lost in St James's Park, and it was an insipid display. You look at last season, it was around this time of the season, I think it was like autumn time, when Arteta had a meltdown at the VAR officials and the referee about decisions. And it looked like last weekend was going to be the same when Arsenal had a penalty shout ruled out, when Gyökeres was taken out by the Newcastle goalkeeper Nick Pope. The decision was that Pope got a touch on the ball, so therefore it wasn't a foul. I still think it was a foul and it was a penalty, but it wasn't given. And the game was 1-1 deep into injury time. They get a late enough equaliser as it is. I think previous season Arsenal would have either got away with a draw and been content or lost. But they went one step further this time and they won the game without playing too well, without reaching their potential. And that's the one thing that Arsenal haven't been able to do. So I think the omens are quite positive for Mikel Arteta and Arsenal.
They have a good opportunity to actually go top of the league this weekend.
Yeah.
As I said, Chelsea play Liverpool and Arsenal play West Ham, who are struggling. I actually have a West Ham fan on the show. Before I actually talk about West Ham, I do want to mention another manager, because Graham Potter obviously sacked from his job at West Ham.
Yeah.
Another manager who is he going to last another few games is Ruben Amorim, the ever so positive Dave Moore, who I've been mentioning on this show quite often.
How is
because
he?
Because he's my sounding board for United fans.
Yeah.
And obviously he was delusionally positive for so long. And on Monday I says to him, 3-1 against Brentford. How are you feeling now? Oh, he just said, I think he's gone, isn't he?
Yeah.
So it's inevitable now. Nearly when is the question? If they drop points, they play Sunderland this weekend. If they drop points, the international break, they then play Liverpool away when we're back.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that United's game at home to Sunderland and then away to Liverpool are equally unpredictable. Equally. They could lose Sunderland comfortably at Old Trafford.
But were you even surprised when you saw that Brentford went 1-0 up?
Absolutely
on
Saturday, not. And the thing about, the other thing as well, right, is Brentford have the worst record in the Premier League when they go ahead. So they were there for the taking, Cahill. And the last two seasons, United have got late winners at Brentford. They've scored late goals there. First of all, let's celebrate Keith Andrews and Brentford, because they are the unofficial team of the football kickoff.
Hear, hear.
So it's a brilliant result for Keith Andrews, because he had lost three of his first five. He was under a slight bit of pressure and they were well warranted that victory. Ruben Amorim said afterwards, and now let's get on to Amorim here, where he said, well, we played Brentford's game. So it's great to see that one of the managers out there had a real game plan and strategy, and that was our own Keith Andrews. So first of all, brilliant stuff by Andrews. As for Ruben Amorim, I tend to agree with your buddy Dave Moore, who was probably speaking on behalf of many Manchester United supporters, in that I feel it's done. I have to caveat at that with saying that I am a huge fan of the way Ruben Amorim conducts himself. And I think many people would disregard that and say, who cares, because he's not getting results. I do like the cut of his jib, Cal. I do
still
like the way he talks about football, yeah. And there is a very irrational side to me that really wants this guy to succeed at United, that really wants this to eventually work out. There's a part of me that thinks, well, Ineos are getting to that self-reflection stage of ownership where the Glazers never really acknowledged or were self-accountable for that. Look, we've made another mistake here. But there's too much pride and ego in Jim Ratcliffe's setup to admit another mistake, I think. I think it has to be catastrophic against Sunderland for them to pull the trigger on Ruben Amorim heading into the next international break. It does give a natural gap there to do something drastic like that. I get the impression that Amorim would not be against the idea of being sacked, because he's not going to walk.
You don't think so?
There's millions up for grabs here. He'd be crazy to.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he's fully against the idea. I know as early as January this year, i.e. about 2 months into his tenure, he was seriously considering walking away without any compensation. He said it again later last season. I think the feeling was, give him the summer, let him work on his own signings, and there's no European football. And of course, very quickly this season, there was no League Cup football. Do you know the first time that Manchester United play a midweek game again? December. So they're going to have a week or minimal 6 days between every game until then. They have so much time to work.
Isn't that incredible?
On training. The issue he has, he keeps telling the world what he's going to do. I'm not moving from this system. This is the system. You guys don't understand. And I understand that most clubs have top scouting departments now that they can scout the weaknesses of any opposition. But Amram's definitely making it easier for everyone else by saying, we're playing 3-4-2-1.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, that's what we're playing. Great, says the opposition. I know exactly how you're going to line up. And the only thing he changes is he makes substitutions all the time, but he changes like for like, essentially. So Lenny Yoro came on for Harry Maguire at the back again against Brentford. Of the 49 games that Amram has presided over, he's made that type of change 42 times in defence. But he was doing that at Sporting Lisbon. And therein lies the problem of what they hired. Reality versus expectations. Ruben Amram at Manchester United. They had this idea of this young fella, this hot young coach, who wasn't even 40 when he agreed to take over at United, that he's going to take United finally into the modern era of football. They never accounted for the fact that they did not have the personnel present at the club to actually play the system in which the manager that presides over it is so stubborn, he will not consider an alternative. So they have two decisions to make here. Number one, sack him and sack him right now so that they can right the wrong of this system. Or the other decision is back him and back him for the next few transfer windows. And I say that because if this thing is going to work under Amram, and it looks unbelievably unlikely that it will, you have to give him the players that are going to fit into this system. 3-4-2-1. So he's got to get rid of wingers who are playing wing back where it doesn't really work. He has to find proper central midfielders, and he has to have a cohesive front line, which he doesn't really have yet. So you need to give him three or four windows to do that. But the more deep you go into those windows, the more you're back in Amram and the more you're moving away from his successor and what they want to do, because it's very likely that whoever comes in after Amram will not think the same way as him. They're in a very fragile position. Even by Manchester United standards, it's incredibly fragile at the moment.
When you lay it down like that, it certainly is. Wow.
It's unbelievable. And you know what? I worry about Amram next, because if you look at what happens to the United managers in the last few years after they leave the club, Erik ten Hag gets the Bayer Leverkusen job, is sacked within basically minutes of joining that club. He gets about a game and a half. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is out of work for a long time after leaving United, eventually gets the Beşiktaş job in Turkey, is let go. Ralf Rangnick was only interim. His big legacy is saying that the club needs open heart surgery. He's the Austria national team manager now. And before that again, Jose Mourinho went on a tour of Europe after United to no great success. Okay, he got Spurs to a League Cup final, wasn't allowed manager, got sacked 6 days before that, and he got Roma's inaugural Conference League. That was it. And before that, Van Gaal never managed a club again, and David Moyes had a terrible time for years after with Sunderland and the Real Sociedad before eventually redeeming himself second time around at West Ham. Doesn't mean to say that's going to happen to Ruben Amram. He's only 40.
Seems to be only the players do well once they leave the clubs. You just look at some of the players that have left now and say, oh yeah, they can play football.
Yeah.
Well, one club who did sack their manager was West Ham.
Yeah.
They sacked Graham Potter. Also quite inevitable. Nuno Espirito Santo is in. Not long out of a job, and he's back in one.
Yeah.
Not long out of a job at all. I'm going to be joined by John McCarthy from the Irish Hammers to chat a bit more about the sacking. But it is an interesting one, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The timing of a Cahill is amazing. So West Ham United sacked Graham Potter on a Saturday morning.
Mm.
And the first thing I thought of is, has anyone ever been sacked on a Saturday morning in the Premier League? Saturday morning? That's match build-up time.
You think that's weird?
So weird, right? Now, well, grant you this, but it's also nonsense that West Ham weren't playing till Monday night, some 2.5 days later. It's not that. It's sanctity of Saturday morning. It's time to get ready for the 3 o'clock game, so to speak. And this guy gets sacked. I had never heard the likes of it. So I got on to some people, some journalist buddies of mine. Has this ever happened before? Has a manager ever been sacked on a Saturday in the Premier League? I got on to some really good sources.
And
there is an answer.
There is
an answer I'm going to put out there.
Okay.
Who was the other Premier League manager sacked on a Saturday? Now, I've left that open by saying a Saturday, not Saturday morning.
Okay, right. So I'm guessing there's no one else on a Saturday morning.
I don't think so. I would absolutely love if someone came with an answer on our socials or on our email, if they actually got an answer to this. Since 1992 in the Premier League, has a manager ever been sacked on a Saturday morning until Graham Potter was relieved of his services? So there's one other answer of a manager in the Premier League. I was going to give a massive hint there, but I won't. And there's another, if you want to go to English football overall, there was a certain cup competition played where a manager got sacked on the same day, which was a Saturday.
Okay, so there has been a few on a Saturday.
Two.
Will we find out the answer before the end of the show?
Sure.
Okay. You have to give it to us at some stage.
Yeah. I'm happy to say it, yeah. I love the fact of the one who was in the Premier League. There's a buddy of mine reminded me of it, and it was wild. I forgot about it because it was really dramatically done the way it was done.
Okay. Well, hold on to that answer. On the way is John McCarthy from the Irish Hammers, which had all about the manager that was sacked on a Saturday morning. Colm, you will be back. We'll look ahead to some of this weekend's games. Thank you very much, sir.
No bother, buddy.
The Kickoff with Colm Minogue.
Time to talk to another fan. And this week I was thinking it was a good time to talk to a West Ham fan. I've got John McCarthy from the Irish Hammers on the line. How are you, John?
Very good, thanks, Cahill.
You're based in Cork City, you are?
That's correct, yeah.
I'm looking at you here on the screen and you have a great backdrop. So you have the West Ham flag, you have a couple of jerseys, you have a jersey on, a hat on, there's a couple of jerseys draped around the couch there. Very stylish. How long are you supporting West Ham?
I've been following them since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. So I'm following roughly about 50 years.
Are you originally from London?
I'm 20 miles outside of London, so 40 miles away from West Ham. I moved here in just before the millennium.
And what part of Cork are you living in?
In the city, on the north side of the city, across the road from where Roy Keane used to live.
Oh, you're a Mayfield man.
That's right.
Good man. So it's a surprising, isn't it? It's a wonder why you never supported Manchester United.
Got taste. I'm not a glory hunter.
Well, let's talk a bit about West Ham. The reason I'm talking to you is because there's been a bit of a change recently. Hasn't been the best starts of seasons for you. You're currently 19th in the league. 4 points from 6 games, 1 win, 1 draw. Graham Potter was your manager. Sacked last weekend. Former Nottingham Forest boss Nuno Espirito Santo is in. The only game he won this year was against Nottingham Forest, which is kind of ironic.
That's ironic, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Ironic, yeah. Like it was a tough time for Graham Potter, really. Won only 6 of his 25 matches in charge. It seems, looking on the outside, it looks like he never really got the love of the fans. That never really worked out, did it? How did you feel about Graham before this season, let's say?
When he was at Brighton, he had the chairman picking his players and everything. He was doing a grand job and the football looked lovely. You know, but he was playing money ball and it suited Graham Potter. He'd done well in Europe as well. That's how he made his name. Then he took the Chelsea job and got found out. And exactly the same thing happened to us.
Well, the only thing about Graham is that before the Chelsea job, he was one of the people tipped to be Southgate's successor.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, at Brighton, he did a great job. The Chelsea thing didn't work for him. He would say that he was kind of shafted at a time when there was a new owner and things were changing anyway. But it just didn't really work at West Ham, did it?
He came with all the attributes that we saw at Brighton. You know, he wants to play the youth. You know, he wants to play a style of football that we might find attractive. You know, going back to the West Ham way, I was talking to the lads about this and we're getting slated currently that nobody knows what the West Ham way is, you know, and it's very insulting to a Hammer fan, you know, the West Ham way, trying to explain it to people. That was something that Ron Greenwood talked about England managers. He started back in the late 60s, 70s when he was West Ham manager, bringing the kids through and playing a sort of continental football. And that's the West Ham way, you know, try to play attractive football. We could lose 10-0, but so long as it looked like a good game and we enjoyed it, as Hammers, we're happy.
Really? You don't have the attitude of win whatever way you can?
No. That's what we had with Moyes. I mean, Moyes was dire to watch, you know, and it took a long time for it to, you know, to properly gel with him and find, you know, we managed to fluke a trophy out of him. So it's not the West Ham way. As I say, you'll ask any Hammer, you know, we beat 3-0, but once we looked like we were good, you know, if the ball's being passed around and there's a bit of flair, we're happy.
It's interesting because a lot of football fans would say once there's results, they don't really care what way the football is played, because at the end of the year, when it's the honours roll, you see who's won what trophy. It's never really discussed, or it's never said underneath, this is the way they played football. It's just Liverpool are Premier League champions.
I know, but Liverpool can't say they won the World Cup and West Ham can.
Okay, yeah, okay, fair. Okay. Talk to me about Nuno, John. Are you looking forward to what Nuno's going to bring?
I'm pretty excited, yeah. What he done with Wolves, he turned them around really quickly, and they were looking dangerous. You know, they were looking at European football. And then he went to Forest, and he got Forest into Europe. Mm. So close, like that. You know? That was in one season. You know, so I'm expecting the same again from him. You know, this 19th place, we're not worried about that. The season's only just started.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a guy that knows what he's doing. He's already put his foot down some regard. You know, he was really, really on it on the sideline the other night.
Against Everton.
You really see, he was getting really, you know, not emotional, but you could really see him passionate about the game. You know, and when Jared scored, then scored the equaliser, you know, the pressure was off. But you know, I think he's got a way of playing. He said he wanted people to be aggressive, you know. Now, unfortunately, Graham Potter got rid of all our aggressive players. So that was a bit of a shame. Alvarez is out, you know, sort of things like that. But he wants aggressiveness in the team. And we're capable of that. If we can perform like Forest and Wolves did under Nuno, we're going to fly up the table, hopefully challenge for Europe again.
Yeah, do you think so? Is that the hope, is this season to make a big improvement like that and challenge for Europe?
No. I think Sullivan just wants to always, you know, 14th, 14th, 14th. You know, don't get relegated, you know, and just stay in the league so, you know, the money keeps pouring in. But, you know, because there's no real, as I say, no real ambition there from them. They were just bouncing along, similar to what Newcastle used to do under Ashley. You know, they were doing just enough. As I say, the players we have got, they're not world class, but, you know, some of them are really handy players. Other teams would bite their hands off for them, but it's just, you know, getting them working. And if not this season, you know, sort of top half of the table would be ideal. And then a cup, we're out of one already, a cup or next year a cup.
You play Arsenal on Saturday away from home. Your expectations aren't too high, I would imagine, for that game.
No, we've written off a load of stuff. But we also have the issue with, as I say, with the board, because, I mean, Brentford coming up now, that's going to be live on the television and the stadium's going to be empty.
The stadium will be empty?
You know, yeah, it's being boycotted by fans because of the board.
Talk to me about that.
The board have just taken the fans for a ride. They don't care about us. They've got no ambition. They robbed us of a football stadium. They put us into a rented athletics track, made promises and never fulfilled.
How do you feel about the stadium? Because we were talking about it here on the show last week. I was talking with a Tottenham fan because I was just talking about, does he miss White Hart Lane? And I would imagine that the memories that you might have of Upton Park were something special. And now you're put into the London Stadium, which, yeah, as you said, there's, you know, there's a running track around it. It just doesn't feel like it's a good stadium to be in for a game. Have you been in there yet?
Yeah, and it's got no life at all.
Really?
To be honest.
You're so far away from the pitch. Is that the problem?
It's a running track. It's not a football stadium. It's a running track, and you are miles from the pitch. You know, it's like it's almost like being an away fan at Newcastle when you're stuck up in the gods. You know, you might as well bring a pair of binoculars to see what's going on the pitch.
Okay, so you're not a fan of London Stadium at all.
It's nice. It's nice to look at. It's different. You know what I mean? If you saw the London Stadium, you know, you think, oh, that's good. I mean, I've got pictures of, you know, sort of myself outside it, and it looks good. But when you're inside, then no, you're just too far away. And a lot of us, what happened to us, a lot of us before was when we were at the Berlin, you know, we had all our mates around us. And when we moved there, we were all just dispersed around the stadium, you know? So half the crack was gone, you know?
Yeah. What was Upton Park like?
Oh, brilliant. It's hard to explain. You knew you were home. The camaraderie and everything, it was fantastic.
This Saturday against Arsenal, what are your hopes? What would you be happy to come away with?
Declan Rice to get a splinter in his arse. Look, we beat them last year, so it's easy. It's a game of football. I mean, we can do it. Nuno's going to try hard. I mean, he needs a win now. I mean, his first game, he's got a point away from home.
Mm.
He's got to go for a win now.
You're going to trust Nuno anyway. Your hopes are high for this season now that Nuno's at the wheel.
He's got a good, from what I've seen of his, you know, what he's done with Forest and with Wolves, he's got the right mentality. The only problem is he might play boring football, but he's talking about being aggressive. And if there's aggression on the pitch, I don't want people getting kicked up in the air and stuff, but you know what I mean? Just show a bit of physicality, you know, don't be scared of players. Don't be, you know, coming off of players. Go, give it to them, you know, and take the ball forward. And we've got some great players going forward. The wingers are outstanding. Everything is there in parts. It's just Nuno's just got to stitch the bits together and we'll be feared.
Well, hopefully, for your sake, that you're right and you can get out of that relegation zone. But as you said, it is early days. John McCarthy from the Irish Hammers, best of luck for this season. Hopefully now Nuno turns things around for you and maybe he can make London Stadium your own and you can start to actually like the place a bit more. Best of luck for the season, John.
Thank you, Cal. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Come on, you Irons.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back. And welcome back to Colin Bouygues from Off the Ball.
Are you, Cathal?
Now, let's look ahead. Match week 7 of 38.
Wow.
We're flying it.
Yeah, 7 already.
7 already. Some of the big games this weekend. It's kind of a funny balance this weekend. Mm. There's like Saturday and Sunday. There's lots of games happening on the Sunday as well. I think we'll look at Chelsea-Liverpool, 5:30 on Saturday in Stamford Bridge, live on Sky Sports.
That's a huge one. Huge one because we spoke about Liverpool earlier on the show, their form so far. Chelsea, though, it's interesting under Enzo Maresca. So, like, they were pretty poor at Old Trafford against Manchester United a couple of weeks ago to lose that game.
Awful. Now, the red card at the start didn't help.
It was like, and he was the earliest goalkeeper that's been sent off in the Premier League in about 30 years when Robert Sanchez saw red at 4 minutes.
They had an awful start anyway, though,
because United had 2 chances when it was 11-11. And then Maresca, I don't know if he had a meltdown, but he started doing some strange things where he made like
substitutions.
And it's fine. Was it Estevao, the young Brazilian, he took off first? That was understandable because they had to bring on Philip Jorgensen, the goalkeeper. Then he took off another forward, Pedro Neto, and then another forward in Cole Palmer. Turns out Cole Palmer wasn't fit enough to play. So that was crazy. United took advantage of it, which is a rare thing. But then if you look at Chelsea last week at home to Brighton, again they got a player sent off. And again midweek in Europe they got a player sent off. So the discipline is all over the shop. Fabian Hertzler is Brighton, really good side, really versatile. He's always finding players that most Premier League fans wouldn't have heard of or wouldn't know too much about. And they always play good football. But they go to the Bridge and they win 3-1. With Chelsea down to 10 men again. Overall, for Maresca, do you remember last season, the first half of last season, Chelsea were unreal. And then the media started asking the likes of Maresca and Palmer, Jesus, is the Premier League title on? And they both poo-pooed the idea straight away. Like, no, we're not ready for that at all. And I think it was a self-fulfilling prophecy because they really bought into that feeling that they weren't ready and then went on a poor run of form.
The strangest thing ever to do that.
Really bad. And then, but then they win, look, the FIFA Club World Cup in the summer, the inaugural one, and you know, some people lament it as a tournament and say, well, it was Mickey Mouse pre-season. Other people say, look, they beat the European champions very well in that final. They hammered Paris Saint-Germain 3-0. I mean, look, that was Gianluigi Donnarumma's last game for PSG. He moved to Man City afterwards. So they've proven that they can do it against the best that Europe has to offer, regardless of the competition itself. And then this season, they've once again added more to their arsenal, to pardon the pun. But like they have a ridiculous number of players, Cathal. Like I continuously forget that Alejandro Garnacho plays for Chelsea. You know, this guy left United so dramatically and I was like, they have another winger. They're festooned with wingers.
Started the other night, actually.
And strikers. They're just, every position is so well catered for. So they have the tools to be decent, but they're a little bit inconsistent now. And I do worry for Enzo Maresca's future because Chelsea are not shy in pulling that trigger.
Yeah.
They are not shy. So I think this game, this weekend, is really interesting because Arne Slot has only ever lost twice in a row, twice as Liverpool manager. Once last season and once this past week. So you can imagine for the first time that they could lose 3 in a row at the Bridge. or they go there, they do a job in Chelsea, and then suddenly heading into that international break, the spotlight is firmly on Maresca's head. Look, maybe this is a dull draw. Who knows? But it's interesting.
I don't know.
Are you being a bit harsh on Chelsea? 8
in the league.
They're doing well.
2 points below Man City.
You know what I am being about Chelsea? I'm being realistic about how they run their operations.
Right, okay.
That they're an impatient bunch. I think overall Maresca's done a pretty good job. I think that works against him is like, does he grab the masses as well with his words and all that? I'm not sure. But they're a reasonable outfit under him. They could be maybe a bit better.
He's not Hollywood, is he?
No, and that's fine because he plays to his strengths, I suppose, which is like he's a student of the game. He's a chess master.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
He loves it, Kyle. He's in it for the love of it.
Student
he
of the game.
He doesn't want to be talking to the likes of you and me about this light entertainment football show. Okay. What is this? Can we just talk really about what 3-4-2-1 actually means, guys, for once? Can we? Right. We're like, no, we got to go to these ads, Enzo. Yeah. Hang on.
Got to play a song.
He wants none of that, right? If he was in the pub, he'd be using the coasters as central midfielders and telling us where they should go.
Okay.
Whereas we want to be like, what was your favourite Fiorentina retro jersey? You know,
yeah.
This guy doesn't want to be involved in those type of conversations. But he has proven that he can seriously set up a side and they have a hell of a squad on their day. But I did say, I think it was it last week to you? I was like, for a talented bunch, they don't look very talented. They do tend to underperform. And I do worry about Maresca's future for that reason. I just don't think they're going to be patient with him. But like, you're right though, because they're doing well. But you have to judge them by the standards at which Chelsea are run. Chelsea are not afraid of changing something when it's slightly wrong. Like Ruben Amorim would have been long gone at this stage of Chelsea.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Okay.
Know?
Yeah. What's your prediction?
I'll go 2-1 Liverpool.
2-1
Liverpool.
Liverpool
will get their act together. And I think I don't think Maresca was going to go in the international break by any means. But I think Liverpool will get their act together.
Okay. The other one we'll look at is our Brentford.
Yeah.
They play Manchester City. So they played red last weekend, blue this weekend.
Yeah.
Will they make it a double? Double win?
I think a draw would be an outstanding result in this game. But you never play for a draw, Kyle. If you play for a draw, you're going to lose for sure.
They're at home, by the way, live on Sky Sports again.
If you get that version of Man City from the start of the season that lost to Brighton and then before that lost at home to Spurs, then who knows? Who knows with Brentford? But City are kind of motoring there in the league recently, as in very recently, with the hammering of Burnley. The Manchester Derby stroll in the park. But you know, you can get at City. They are vulnerable. This is not the great City of yesteryear that we saw. And I think, look, Keith Andrews has proven that he can set up his side to be decent against better opposition. Now, would you say that Manchester United are better opposition? They're a big club, for sure. Got 3 points against them. Got a point against Chelsea. As talented and whatever. Flawed, as questionable as Chelsea are. He's still got a point against them. So he can do it in the bigger games. Man City might be a step too far.
Trying to contain Haaland would be a thing, wouldn't it?
I'll go 3-0 Man City.
Okay. It's a bit of a
I have to be the realist in the room here coming in with the football talk. But of course we are supporters of Brentford Football Club, the football kickoff. So I'll reverse that scoreline in the hope of fandom. A 3-0 drubbing. Pep Guardiola, will he leave in the international break? Will Keith Andrews suddenly be linked with that Man United job? Who knows?
Wow.
This could be the making of Keith Andrews.
Manifest it. You're manifesting.
Manifesting
it.
Out of hope versus expectation.
Before I let you go,
yeah,
you're going to tell us who the other manager was that was sacked on a Saturday in the Premier League?
I absolutely will, with joy. It was involving Man City as well. It was against Sunderland on Saturday, 3 o'clock. It was Mark Hughes, who was their first manager when they got the money.
Yeah.
The money in 2008.
Yeah.
And City won the game 4-3. But halftime, Mark Hughes was let go and saw out the second half. And City won the game and he waved to the fans afterwards and that was him. Done.
He was told at halftime that the job was gone.
He was gone. Roberto Mancini came in. And then the other one, which wasn't the Premier League, but it was the FA Cup final. Louis van Gaal, of course, who we mentioned earlier on the show.
Yes.
So Manchester United beat Crystal Palace in the 2016 showdown. He plonks the FA Cup trophy on the table in that press conference. And that's the last we see Louis as Manchester United boss, sacked that day. But of course, that's the end of the season, you know. I mean, this is firmly in season. This is Saturday morning. This is September. This is early days. When Sparky, as he has known, Mark Hughes, got sacked, that was in December. Right by Christmas, actually. I think it was a couple of days before Christmas. I saw a payoff for Christmas that year for Mark Hughes. I think it was 2010. Maybe 2009. 2009 or 2010, one of those. And I believe, having talked to other journalists about this, that they're the only two other times. Okay. So never a Saturday morning specifically. I was thrown by this, man. I can't believe it.
I did not bat an eyelid. Maybe because I was expecting it as well. But I mean,
yeah,
I actually don't think the Saturday morning thing meant anything to many people.
It meant something to me, you know.
Well, it did.
And hopefully there's someone driving this morning or in the kitchen or whatever. And they'll think, oh, who cares? And then they might look out the window now. They do keep your eyes on the road. But look out the window and think to themselves, it really makes you think.
Let's just leave it there. A beautiful end to this beautiful podcast. Colin Buig, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You're a gorgeous guy, Colin.
You have a beautiful brain. We'll be back again next week. Thanks very much for listening to this fulfilling episode of The Kickoff. Enjoy the games this weekend.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.